Good morning. This is the International Connection. My name is Adam Vaughn. I'm joined, as always, by Bob Marshall and Tom Rich. And today we're going to take a look at the third of four sources, which will be featured in the show as it runs throughout File 88. Today we take a look at Dr. Peter Beter from Washington. Bob, what can you tell us about this bizarre source you've dug up for us?
Dr. Beter, I feature summaries of tape transcripts on Friday. And since I don't have much time on the Friday edition, I don't get to explain who he is and why I'm doing it every week. So I welcome this opportunity to explain who he is and why he's important. The things made public by Dr. Beter are extraordinary, but he's not somebody from an unknown zone of civilian life. He practiced general law in Washington from 1951 to 1961, and he became a member of the U.S. Court of Military Appeals in 1952. And the U.S. Supreme Court in 1954, so he had his establishment credentials laid down pretty early. He then was appointed by President Kennedy in 1961 to be the head of the U.S. Export-Import Bank, the largest government-owned bank in the Western world, where he served until 1967. He then ran for governor of West Virginia in 68, which he lost, and then he left America and went to Africa and served as a consultant to developers, primarily in the Republic of Zaire. He's a member of the Judicature Society, the Bankers Club of America, the Royal Commonwealth Society of London, and the United States Naval Institute. And he's listed in the Who's Who in the East and the Blue Book of London and 2,000 Men of Achievement.
Now, he's got a very well-documented past, and he's not some sort of shot in the dark. He did come out of a sort of a history of working within the government in Washington, but there seems to be a split. There seems to be sort of a second part to his career, and the second part is the part we're going to be listening to.
Yes. In 1968, when he ran for governor, he felt his campaign was sabotaged, and that might have had an influence in him going into a private consultant work. I don't know totally if he did, but he disappeared for 5 years and resurfaced in 1973 with a book called The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, meaning the American dollar. And that book got quite a lot of publicity in the United States, and it coined a lot of terms, especially stagflation, that was used by the major economists and media within a couple of years once the oil shock had hit and things like that. And a lot of the things that he laid out in his blueprint for the next 10 years from 1973 on subsequently happened in general in the world of economics. But he really got controversial in 1974 when he claimed that there was no gold in Fort Knox. And he was able to put enough pressure on the government, since he had enough prestigious background that some people were forced to listen to him, that they did an investigation. But they didn't include Beter and his witnesses, which he was willing to bring forward. So the Treasury Department said there was no truth to Beter's claims. He then went on to get to a more hysterical level, it would seem, that because he said that the Russians were planning nuclear cobalt bombs along the shores of the United States and in the Great Lakes. This was denied by the Pentagon, but he did have a meeting with General Brown, who after it said that that these statements by Dr. Beter weren't true. But then Dr. Beter got a message to General Brown again that there was a second level of bombs being put in. And immediately General Brown brought in Beter again, so you would think that he would not listen to him after.
General Brown is
in the Pentagon.
He was Secretary of Defense at that time.
No, I don't think he was the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Okay.
Yeah, you're thinking of the other Brown. Yeah. A second round of bombs were being planted, and Beter had documented he was doing his tapes by that point and was explaining why the Russians were doing this, which involved the problem with the Rockefellers.
Okay.
Now I just want to finish that. His point is that General Brown called him back in without delay to hear where these second level positions were, and then continued, and then they did another investigation, but they would deny that Dr. Beter was part of it, even though they did have a meeting with him, and deny what he said.
You mentioned earlier there's a series of tapes which he put out, and it's one of these tapes which we're going to be listening to today. What is the sort of the history of these tapes? When did they start coming out, and what sort of subject areas do they cover in their length?
Okay, after his book came out in 73, he then got on to the Fort Knox gold scandal. And by the way, he did predict a lot of what happened in Watergate to his readers. He was talking to people, associates, who testified later within his listenership that Beter was very accurate on what happened in Watergate, which led up to August 74 when Nixon resigned. Because the gold investigation at Fort Knox did not include him and it was denied, he had been talking on talk shows for a year, but then he was cut off after that, after the government said what he's saying, after they checked into it, wasn't true. So he started his private tape service for his regular followers and listeners, people who believed that he had some information, and that tape service went on from 1974 till 1982. And he was basically documenting the what the Rockefellers were up to, who had were basically in more control than any other of the power groups from 74 up till 77. But then a startling upset happened, which Peter documents on his tapes, the Battle of the Harvest Moon. And that is the tape I started off with in my transcript, because I didn't want to take it too far back. That's when I started doing the summaries in October last year. And so I'm going to we're going to play the apart topic number two, actually, of a 60-minute tape on, this will be about a 50-minute segment on the consequences and the situation around the Battle of the Harvest Moon, which happened on September 27, 1977.
And for people that aren't familiar with the Battle of the Harvest Moon, I'll paraphrase this very quickly before we get to the tape. Essentially, it talks about a nuclear war or a war that was fought in outer space, essentially on the moon, and it involved Soviet bases and American bases knocking each other out, and Skylab is incorporated into it, and satellites that go missing are incorporated into it, and Star Wars apparently is by some theories, an offshoot of the entire thing, or is actually part of the whole works.
Well, just to explain a little better, the nuclear Rockefellers were going to have a nuclear war with the Russians, and there was a double cross situation.
Now wait a minute, Bob. Come on, let's listen to the tape,
No, what you said was not accurate. So I just want to explain the position of the moon base. The particle beam base on the moon was the Rockefellers' trump card after the nuclear war, to have a victory over the Russians. In brief. Before we play the tape, I just wanted to say that Dr. Beter subsequently made all kinds of predictions over the next 5 years, including naming who would be assassinated, from Reagan through the Pope to Sadat, and even particular bureaucratic battles like the resignation of Alexander Haig. All these things he predicted months before, and they happened even down to the weekend. So I think he was getting some information.
Bob, would it not be technically possible from the time that the Americans landed on the moon in 69 for those 8 years from 69 to 77 to set up the equipment that was required to do this?
Yeah, that's where he says the function of Diego Garcia came in, the island of the Indian Ocean. That's why the Rockefellers and NASA closed down the moon program in 72 and then started the secret shuttle up to the moon to build their particle beam base. Now, the Russians were caught on to this, and that's why they started planting the cobalt bombs along the shores as a kind of restraint on the Rockefeller. But they, meanwhile, were doing a different space station setup where they were setting up their things orbiting around the planet. They couldn't get on the moon. So they just monitored the moon base, and then when the Rockefellers, and then did a surprise attack on them in 1972 and 77.
Okay, now I interrupted you with, come on, Bob. A lot of that, to a lot of people, is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, myself included.
Exactly.
And I think that one of the things that, one of the pieces of medicine to take with this is that you have to look at it in an overall sort of one sort of story type segment. We're only getting one segment of today, and some of the things you've mentioned are sort of
future.
Just a quick question for you. You agree that the Americans landed on the moon, don't you?
No, I mean, I'm not.
No, do you agree with that?
I mean, obviously, you have to accept that as a fact.
Do you agree in 1960 the laser beam was invented?
I agree with that.
Why do you find it difficult to transport one to the moon?
I don't disagree with the mechanics and the availability of the technology to do all that. I'm simply saying that the whole concept of moon wars and the concept of sort of planned assassination and the whole bit, until sort of seen with concrete documentation, is a bit wild. But Dr. Beter is obviously one of the people who has brought this to light and continually brings it to light, and by his standards says he has facts for it. So let's take a listen to the tape and we'll discuss it afterwards.
Okay, there's one thing about his accent may be intimidating to Canadians because he's a tribal southerner, and this accent, even though it might be strange to our ears at first, especially on this kind of tape, once you bypass that and get into the information, I think we can tolerate.
Y'all come back
and
now.
Another
take a listen.
The Rockefeller-Soviet alliance, which has just come apart, was indispensable to the Rockefeller plot to control the world. This was the master stroke that enabled the Rockefellers to follow up their destruction of the British Empire with an active menace that would prevent a revival of Britain and Europe as powerful, independent rivals. The final phase of all this was to be nuclear war one, primarily on American soil. It was to kill tens of millions of Americans, yet it was to be a programmed, limited nuclear war, with the outcome decided ahead of time. In the aftermath, the Rockefellers were to have been enthroned as America's absolute dictators. Europe and Britain were to be absorbed into the Soviet orbit of control, exhausted from energy and other shortages, but virtually unscathed by war itself. That was the deal between the Rockefeller brothers and the Kremlin partners. But true to their tradition, the Rockefellers had a double cross up their sleeve as the culmination of Nuclear War I. To prepare for the war, their plan was to denude America of most of its military power while building up an awesome military machine in the Soviet Union. When the programmed war came, it would be so destructive and America's plight so helpless that despair would seize us all. But then, in our darkest hour, with half of America's population gone, the secret moon base, bristling with particle beam weapons, would come to the rescue. In the space of at most a few days, Soviet military forces worldwide were to be destroyed, and vast numbers of Russians were to die in the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was not supposed to know about this final act. Instead, they were to be caught by surprise and utterly destroyed. And after the fact, the plan was not to tell the world about the moon base. Instead, the Rockefellers would emerge as the only organized power on Earth, and they would attribute it all to, quote, divine intervention, unquote. By this stratagem, they expected to deceive the world, or most of us, to accept their rule as divinely ordained. In this way, they were to become the final heirs of the secret commitment for a one-world government that was set in motion so long ago. In 1924, John D. Rockefeller, Jr., the father of the four Rockefeller brothers, talked of his dream of the day when, quote, "No one will speak of my country, but we will speak of our world," unquote. And on January 31, 1945, before the Protestant Council of New York City, he delivered an address entitled "The Christian Church, What of Its Future?" In this speech, he expounded one of his favorite topics, the need, as he saw it, for the Christian Church as we know it to be replaced with something more suitable as the direct outcome of the very conflicts which the Rockefeller Empire itself had secretly spawned. Praising the self-sacrifice and loyalty of millions whose lives were being ruined and snuffed out, Rockefeller painted it all as a wonderful crusade. With growing enthusiasm, he said, "What an opportunity, what a privilege, what a duty." The nightmare of world war, in other words, was merely a necessary prelude to the future status he envisioned for the Christian Church. Quote, "It would be the Church of the Living God," unquote. It would be devoid of all, quote, "ordinance, ritual, creed, all non-essential," unquote. Stripped of its camouflage, John D. Rockefeller, Jr. was reviving the ancient concept of the God-King, the ruler who is to be worshipped and who can do no wrong. But unknown to the Rockefellers until very recently, The Soviet Union found out years ago about the final Rockefeller plan to destroy them in a double cross by means of the moon base. That is why the Soviet Union initiated a crash program to develop a particle beam of their own 10 years ago. And this is why they launched such massive efforts in civil defense 5 years ago. This is why the Soviet Union tried to surprise the Rockefellers over a year ago with their own double cross during the summer of 1976, beginning with the underwater nuclear missile crises. As of a year ago, the particle beam weapons race was very close, but it appeared that the Rockefeller moon base would win. As an interim blackmail system, the Rockefellers had arranged for the CIA super missiles to be planted in the oceans by the Glomar Explorer and other means, as I first revealed in audio letter 20 for January 1977. But as of now, only two of these CIA super missiles, Atlantic missiles number 1 and 2, are still operational, all the rest having been ruined by gradual corrosion and leakage. By now, the Rockefellers expected to have their secret moon base operational, rendering the CIA blackmail missiles obsolete. The Kremlin was afraid that the Rockefellers were going to succeed, dooming the Soviet Union to certain disaster at the hands of the moon base. So they decided to strike first in a surprise attack. The result was the Soviet underwater missile crisis of 1976, described in audio letters 14 through 16, July through September 1976. As I described in audio letter 16, a Soviet missile-laden mini-sub became trapped in Chesapeake Bay in late September 1976. It was our perfect opportunity to blow the whistle and stop the entire Soviet program of preparation for surprise attack by making it public. But as I detailed in audio letter 17 for October 1976, this chance was thrown away by President Gerald Ford and Secretary of State Henry Kissinger in their Red Friday agreement arranged at the White House with Andrei Gromyko 1 year ago tomorrow. At the time, such an abject capitulation seemed as incomprehensible as it was treasonous. Later, I learned of the CIA super missiles, which the Rockefellers continued to hold as a club over the head of the Kremlin, and it made more sense. But only now, in the light of the moon base and the Rockefeller plan for a final double cross, does it all make sense. The Rockefeller brothers thought that they could assure themselves of surviving the war and expected to have the moon base ready to destroy the Soviet Union at will. Under these conditions, the more horrendous the warfare up to the point of their falsified divine intervention, the better, from their point of view. Their objective was total control, including the spiritual deception of millions. The Soviets, meanwhile, were preparing for a doomsday approach. That is, to be in a position to threaten such total destruction worldwide with all their underwater nuclear weapons that the Rockefellers would be afraid to trigger all-out war by using the moon base. But 3 days ago, on the night of the harvest moon, September 27, 1977, it all unraveled. America lost the Battle of the Harvest Moon. That same day, Tuesday, September 27, 1977, Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko delivered an ultimatum to the United States in a speech at the United Nations. A few days earlier, the Soviet Navy had expelled all British and French fishing trawlers from the Barents Sea. And as Gromyko spoke, the Barents Sea was filling up with scores of Soviet submarines, massing in preparation for deployment into the North Atlantic. And at the same time, the huge Pacific Soviet submarine fleet was massing in the Sea of Okhotsk, off the southwest tip of the Kamchatka Peninsula, for deployment into the North Pacific. And on top of that, six more particle beam satellites were being readied for launch from four Soviet cosmodromes, one each at Baikonur and Tyuratam, and two each at Kapustin Yar and Plesetsk. Two particle beam satellites, Cosmos 929 and another, were already in orbit by that time. At the United Nations, Gromyko denounced the fact that relations between the United States and the Soviet Union have entered a period of, quote, stagnation, if not a downright slump, unquote. Then he demanded that a new agreement limiting nuclear arms be arrived at, quote, without any delay, unquote. Most people did not recognize this as a veiled ultimatum, but the Rockefellers did. Gromyko added that the Soviet Union is now ready to halt underground nuclear tests for a while, even if others do not. The reason for this statement, which surprised everyone, is that the particle beam has now superseded all nuclear weapons as a front line of Soviet armaments. That evening, an unusual nighttime meeting with Jimmy Carter was hastily arranged at the White House at Gromyko's demand. The Rockefeller major media went out of their way to portray this unexpected meeting as a good thing, despite Gromyko's very harsh words at the United Nations, with breathless assurance that a breakthrough had apparently been achieved toward a new SALT accord. But that, my friends, was not Gromyko's message at all. Boiled down to his essentials, here's what Gromyko told Carter and Vance on the night of the Harvest Moon, September 27, 1977. We, the Soviet Union, have today destroyed the American moon base, which your sponsors had planned to use against us in the coming war. Now it is we who are in command, and now we will oblige you with the war you have been working so hard to bring about. The war will now be fought on our terms, not yours. But you are to give no hint publicly about any of this. If you do, I am instructed to inform you that you and your sponsors will forfeit your status in America as well as your lives. The following day, the massed Soviet submarine fleets began moving out of the Barents Sea and the Sea of Okhotsk, bound respectively for the east and west coasts of the United States. Other Soviet submarines were also ordered to converge on our country from positions worldwide. Yesterday, Jimmy Carter held a news conference in which he did his best to obey Gromyko's instructions. His eyes puffy from sedation and lack of sleep, he talked about anything and everything, but he exposed the glowing CBS and other reports of 2 days earlier about an alleged SALT breakthrough for what they were, with the words, quote, an immediate agreement is not in prospect, unquote. And in his opening remarks, inserted in the context of energy matters, he blurted out, quote, the reason that we have to act is not because we have crises or emergencies at this present time, but because they are imminent, unquote. And today, after a hurried meeting with Secretary of State Vance in New York, Gromyko left for Moscow. Meanwhile, our space program has suddenly fallen on hard times. Yesterday, for the second time in 2 weeks, after many years of faultless launchings, an American rocket abruptly exploded during launch. This one, an Atlas Centaur, happened to be carrying an important communication satellite to be stationed over the Indian Ocean. Meanwhile, the Soviet Union launched Salyut 6, and there are signs that now, at long last, the Soviet Union will decide to go to the moon. After all, There is no longer anyone there to stop them. And the possibility exists that very soon there will once again be a particle beam weapons base on the moon to menace the Earth, this time controlled by the Soviet Union. And just today, the Houston NASA Space Center activities having to do with the American moon base were shut down.
Well, that was obviously Dr. Peter Beter with Southern drawl intact. What can you say about it? I mean, I find it kind of strange, but...
Well, I'd just like to add that in the Battle of the Harvest Moon was in September 77. In October 77, then-Secretary of Defense Harold Brown told reporters at the Pentagon that the Soviets had achieved an operational ASAT, that's anti-satellite system capability. However, he declined to describe it. That same month, we'll all remember, even though it was quite a while ago, you'll remember that Skylab was destroyed in a giant fireball over the United States, and after puzzled headlines died down, NASA initiated a long, drawn-out cover-up based on the fiction about Skylab sinking from orbit, and of course, months later in northern Canada, it crashed.
So that, let me just say, that wasn't Skylab, that was one of the Cosmos, but the story about Skylab started to go on for another 2 years. And what was interesting, Beter predicted that, you remember when Skylab was collapsing, it was going to fall anywhere on the planet?
Right.
Well, he said it would have to be in the Indian Ocean region. And in the summer of 1980, that's where it landed, flew over the Indian Ocean region and landed in Australia. Because that was the old Rockefeller zone and the only place the story could be covered.
Okay, now... this wasn't brought up in the tape today, and there's another aspect of Beter which those of us who have listened to the International Connection are familiar with. He also has the concept of the organic robotoid. Now, this, for people who have never heard about this, is essentially is a human robot the actual details of which you can go into, but it's not necessary really. There are a number of things that he says that are just too fantastic to even be comprehensibly believable.
Right. Now, the organic robotoid is, by his definition, a computerized animal. He says, he talked about the use of doubles all through history, but he said a new breakthrough happened in 75 in Russia with this kind of, I don't know if it's genetic, it's not a clone, but some kind of manufacturing, but we'll be able to play the excerpt in future programs where he explains the technology
My trouble with him is that he brings you to a point where it's believable, where there could be a military base on the moon. Why wouldn't there be? Who knows?
Yeah.
Where there could be some sort of assassination plots on specific world leaders. I mean, it's all very plausible, but then he sort of goes one step too far and he loses me. He just doesn't become believable. The whole idea of an entire war being fought in outer space and no one knowing, the idea that NASA is continually launching these satellites and covering it up so successfully, there's no leaks. I mean, it just doesn't seem to jive.
Okay, it's hard to believe. You were just saying Beter said one thing about his tone is it kind of is like in the level of dramatic but historical. He believed that nobody would really follow and understand the organic robotoid stuff in 79, but he said he had to keep on doing that even though a lot of his listenership fell off, because he said he was doing this series for history, for a record of the times, that it wouldn't be apparent. He said the next 5 years from 79 on wouldn't make any sense unless people had access to what Beter was talking about. So that he wasn't that concerned about the believability, but he felt constricted to talking about what he was told.
But it sort of reminds me of a class of literature called historical fiction,
right?
Where they pull some of the truths from the past out, and then they add to it to sort of make a jelly out of it, and it doesn't have a semblance of truth after a while. This whole idea of satellites being wiped out by particle beams, and the fact that Skylab was shot down and landed specifically on the planet Earth, and the whole bit, it just doesn't seem to quite come together. How do you pull it together, and how do you rationalize it as being true?
Okay, well, I find that I don't know if it's true personally, but because certain things happened after that, like Skylab did come down, that there was that cosmosphere that Tom mentioned came down in northern Canada, all these things, and then that the Star Wars thing came on as part of Reagan's first term in 83, all these things a few years ago people didn't think were talkable.
Now
they're talkable. And that is just, if Beter is on the leading edge, then that's why this stuff is surfacing a few years later.
Now, he stopped putting out his tapes. Why has he stopped putting out his tapes?
Because he said after some events in 82 that it would get very dangerous for his kind of service through 1983 because the Bolsheviks, the European team that took over the Pentagon and knocked off the Rockefellers, they would be clamping down on American domestic areas. And he also had health problems.
Okay. Well, that just about wraps up the International Connection. This is week three of an extended look at some of the sources that Bob Marshall brings to CKLN. Thanks for tuning in. For Bob Marshall, for Tom Rich, I'm Adam Vaughn. Join us next week when we take a look at...
We're going to have Lyndon LaRouche and his organization, the Executive Intelligence Review. We hope to get them on the line and find out where they came from.
And who they are, because they're perhaps the most controversial in terms of listenership response of all the ones we have on. Anyway, that's next week, same time, same place on File 88. Thanks very much for listening.
I've got it.